Automakers have to greatly improve the fuel efficiency of their vehicles. But what technology are they going to use to hit the government's stringent targets? And just as importantly, are we going to be able to afford that technology? To help me get to the bottom of those issues, I have three experts joining me today. Christopher Thomas is the vice president of BorgWarner's Advanced Engineering Group. Roger Clark is the senior manager of the Energy Center at General Motors. And Mircea Gradu is the vice president in charge of transmission, powertrain, and driveline engineering at the Chrysler Group. We'll be back to talk to them in just a moment.
Underwriting for AutoLine this week is provided by...
We are IAC Group, a global tier one supplier of vehicle interior solutions that span the rapid, ever-changing needs of today's industry. From interior design and engineering to manufacturing and delivery, IAC, our heritage, your advantage.
From the AutoLine studios, here is your host, John McElroy.
Thanks for joining us for AutoLine this week. We're really going to dive into this issue of fuel economy and what it's going to take for the automotive industry to be able to hit fuel economy standards. And, of course, I've got a great program or panel today. Roger Clark from General Motors, Mircea Gradu from Chrysler, and Christopher Thomas from BorgWarner. Great all having you here with us on AutoLine this week.
Our pleasure, John.
Thank you. Thanks,
Roger, let me start with you. I mean, these fuel economy standards are tough right now, but especially after 2015, they really start to ramp up. The industry's got to hit an average of 54.5 miles per gallon by 2025. Can it do it?
Yeah, well, that's going to be the big question. And, you know, that's what we're working very hard on at General Motors. And we're looking at every possible option. And I can tell you that I believe the industry will do it. GM's always met these requirements, and we will find a way. The key is doing that in a way that customers will still want to buy the vehicles that we produce. So that's really the big factor.
Isn't that the key, Mircea, that it's not
Absolutely.
Just a technology issue, it's can we get the customers
it's the
to buy
it? Customer acceptance. And on that note, you know, we certainly pursue various hybrid technologies. And as you very well know, there is no crystal ball to tell us exactly which one of those technologies will prevail in the long term. So what we are doing, we are testing the market with fleet vehicles that are currently exposing the customer, the end user, actually to issues that can occur in plug-in hybrid vehicles, in other types of hybrids, including hydraulic hybrids, actually, and in various vehicle segments. So we plan also to diversify the penetration of these technologies by vehicle segment. I think you know the news. Fiat and Chrysler now are benefiting tremendously from each other's technologies, and we are the center of competence for the electric and hybrid technology at Chrysler. And Fiat brought to the table a lot of engine and transmission technologies that are extremely efficient in Europe. They are the vehicle manufacturer with the best CO2 at the fleet level. So I think we have a lot to learn and to apply from them. So,
Chris, BorgWarner seems to be well positioned on both the engine and transmission side. I mean, for you guys, this CAFE standard must be just terrific.
Well, yeah, BorgWarner, everything we do is really focused on fuel economy, performance, and emissions, and making all of those better. So we have one of the broadest portfolios of powertrain products. And again, all of everything we do is focused on those three key items. And our engineers really know engines and transmissions, as you say, because our engineers are working with the advanced engineering groups in each of the OEMs around the world. And so maybe we have a slightly different perspective than these guys, but we have maybe a more global perspective on what's happening.
What I want to ask you about is turbocharged engines, sure. Which seems to be all the rage these days, where automakers are putting in smaller engines, but turbocharging them. Yet I remember back to the 1980s, where if you put a turbo on an engine, it was like an on-off switch.
Right.
Bang, it came on like a hammer, and until it did, the thing didn't move. These new ones are, I'm astonished at how good they are and how small the engines are. What have been the technologies that have made these new ones so good?
Well, you know, as you say, back in the 80s and 90s, turbocharging was really just for performance, or it was for maybe using a surrogate, where you put a turbocharged engine in a place where the vehicle wouldn't have a V6.
V6 could not fit, so you turbocharged
the four-cylinder. Right. And it was really just a performance improvement. Mm-hmm. But there really wasn't much fuel economy improvement with that. What we're seeing now with the advent of variable cam timing and using that in those engines as well as direct injection, this is what's really enabled this downsizing and boosting trend that you're seeing sort of sweep across the industry. Mm-hmm.
But Gradu, isn't it also the combination with the transmission too? Because it's the total package.
It definitely is, and I just wanted to give you, John, a perspective that's probably more rare in your discussions, because obviously you jumped on the engine turbocharging technology, which certainly brings the engine downsizing topic into the discussion. But from the driveline and transmission perspective, and I know that Chris is very much aware of this, we work with the supply base to try to actually improve on that side from the perspective of wide gear ratio spread, which allows us essentially to achieve the same type of things that we achieve with turbocharging. It's another way of downsizing, if you want, at the powertrain level. And specifically to BorgWarner, we have two technologies that are less known maybe by the end user and the market. One is the active transfer case technology, which
for all-wheel drive.
For all-wheel drive product, which in conjunction with the front axle disconnect in real drive-based all drive systems like the one that we have on the 300 and Charger or in the trucks. I know the General Motors is applying the same technology in trucks. It allows us to disconnect the unnecessary portion of the driveline. Essentially, we operate an all drive or four-wheel drive vehicle in tool drive mode when, obviously, the customer doesn't need the benefits of all drive. And we gain the benefits in terms of efficiency and fuel economy driveline with less capacity losses.
In other words, you can have all-wheel drive these days, and it's not going to be quite the fuel economy penalty that it might have been
absolutely
in the past.
That's right. The benefits are in the 2 to 5% range, which are extremely significant. If you look at the bang for the buck assessment, which we all do, I think it's a tremendous value in the technology. The other aspect that I wanted to mention is the so-called mechatronic unit, which BorgWarner provides for dual clutch transmissions, in addition to the clutch technology, and that also allows us to improve on the efficiency of the transmission, because dual clutch transmissions are extremely efficient both in the wet clutch and dry clutch version of them. So those are two things that, you know, our friends at BorgWarner are contributing with and are less known than the turbocharging technology, which is on all the billboards in Detroit. So that's maybe we should create some for transmission driveline technology as well. So
absolutely. The transmission is critical in that, because as you downsize the engine, you have limited amount of torque. It takes some time to build that torque in a turbocharger, but with the transmission improvements that we have today, you can get to you can be operating at very low speed, which is critical for fuel economy. Every 100 RPM on the cycle is worth almost 0.8 mph, mm-hmm. and then accelerate the engine very rapidly mm-hmm. when it's time to demand the power. So the integration of those technologies is critical, and we've been paying a lot of attention to that.
Also, one thing that I really like what General Motors is doing these days is really gearing down its small four-cylinder engines. Yeah. As a point of example, I drove the Chevy Sonic recently, and at 70 miles an hour. This is with a 1.4-liter turbo engine.
Right. Yeah.
It was only turning about 1,300 RPM, which floored me. Is this a strategy that GM's going to use a lot more?
This has been a strategy that I've had for years, and GM has been embracing for a long time.
But what changed? Because before, everybody said, well, but then if you try to accelerate, there's no power.
That's the critical issue. You have to be able to provide the responsiveness. So you can't just have the engine be sitting there at really low speed and then when it's time to accelerate, sit there flat and not respond. And so that's been the critical issue over the years. Mm-hmm. And today, with these newer technologies, we're able to make it respond fast so you can get the engine down, keep it down, but then when it's time to accelerate, accelerate very rapidly. Our Equinox has a 2.4-liter SIDI engine, and that improves...
What's SIDI?
Direct injection of the fuel into the cylinder.
Okay, and just for those who may not know the terminology. Right.
It gives better torque and power. That particular vehicle in the past had a V6, and we were selling on the order of 80% V6 in those vehicles because it wasn't responsive. But with the new technologies, we got that engine size down with the four-cylinder. We're selling 90% four-cylinders now. And it's really been a win for us because with the responsiveness, you get the fuel economy in that vehicle and the responsiveness. Mm-hmm.
And what changed, John, very specifically on the technology side, we're talking about 8 and 9 speed transmissions now. And when I mentioned...
Yeah, and I'm a guy who grew up with 3-speed automatics or manuals, and now we're up to 9 speeds.
There's some 10s out there.
Yeah, exactly. No kidding. Right.
Yeah. Well, there are some 10s, but again, there is a point of diminishing returns, so we are carefully assessing, you know, the investment into a new technology from the benefit perspective. But the 8 and 9 speeds, which are on the market, well, the 8-speed in our case is on the market right now. In the Charger N300, you're getting a 331 mile per gallon fuel economy, and the first gear ratio is 4.7, and overdrive is 0.6. So with that kind of spread, you get to the point that we were making earlier here. I mean, the very low RPM at highway speeds, which gives you the opportunity for very, very good highway fuel economy. So.
What about continuously variable transmissions? Right now, at this snapshot in time, Nissan seems to be almost the only automaker seriously committed to it, including the hybrids, the strong hybrids, which need that. But, I mean, the new Nissan Altima has got best-in-class fuel economy, and they largely attribute it. There's a number of other things that went along. To the CVT, where do you see the CVT ever making a comeback with other automakers?
Well, I think the CVT has kind of its niche. Our view is that the dual-clutch transmissions are going to grow much faster than CVTs. Mm-hmm. And actually, the good old-fashioned planetary gear transmission, as Mercher mentioned, you're getting outstanding fuel economy on some of these vehicles with it when you start having 8 and 9 speeds. Mm-hmm. And it really enables you to downspeed the engine. And really run those engine speeds at much lower speeds on the fuel economy cycle.
It's a system level, and Chris implied that, and we all say the same thing. It's not a transmission technology, engine technology, vehicle. It's all together, and certainly that's the key, how you integrate. So if Nissan has great results, they have it because they integrate very well the technologies.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely they do. Roger, General Motors is doing a number of things, as you talked about, the louvers that close off the front end for better fuel economy, better aerodynamics that translates into fuel economy as well. But is this the end of the V8 engine? Is this the end of, normally aspirated engines without a turbo and all that, or what?
We are going to find a way to make our efficiency gains and still provide the customer with all the benefits that they expect out of their vehicles. So I don't think it's the end of anything, okay? I think that we're going to find technological solutions, and just to the point earlier, the integration of those solutions that will allow customers to have the vehicles that they love to buy and drive and enjoy and meet the fuel economy standard. So... will it shift mix? Yes. I think you're going to see shifts in mix and shift in things, but you're still going to see the diversity of vehicles that we have. Maybe not to the same extent that we have today, but I think you'll see very few vehicles leaving the market.
General Motors seems to be very committed to what it's calling e-assist,
yes,
where you have a smaller battery with an electric motor that gives some assist so you can use a smaller gasoline engine and get better fuel economy. Absolutely. I've got to believe this kind of approach is almost going to go completely across the board.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, what we're trying to do there is make elements of hybridization affordable to everyone. And that's what we're working on hard with trying to get the cost effectiveness of all these systems optimized so that you can put them as base content on nearly every vehicle.
Right, and start-stop technologies, are key in achieving a very good bang for the buck from the fuel economy perspective.
Right.
Customer acceptance, again, is a big deal with start-stop, and I think... there are so many solutions currently available that we cannot really predict which one will be the winner. But again, we are trying to understand the benefits of each and prepare for all of them. And from the transmission perspective, when you think about the voltage requirements in a start-stop vehicle, if you can find innovative solutions like hydraulic storage and for the downtime when the pumps are not working and you're not putting additional electric loads on the vehicle, that's a benefit. So the industry innovates tremendously in preparation for this for the application of start-stop and other technologies, but there is no unique, clearly defined path. We are trying to branch into all directions at this point.
So. Yeah, I think you're going to see that these first-generation stop-start systems are going to have problems. There's going to be some nuances that people don't like.
What is it about them, Chris? Because some seem very good. They're seamless. You don't even notice them. Some, you know, they come to a stop when you stop at a stop sign or a stoplight to save fuel economy. But when they start up, it sends a shudder through the car.
Sure.
Or sometimes I'm coming up to a stoplight and I get out and the engine turns off and, ooh, I got to go. And there's a hesitation there that I don't like.
And there's a variety of things that we're doing to, and, you know, we're innovating to try and solve those problems. One of the things we do for that that last issue that you just mentioned is we have a one-way clutch system that lets you re-engage the starter motor before the engine actually shuts down. And so then it restarts the engine much quicker, and you don't get that hesitation. We also have an accumulator, to Murch's point, that lets you refill the clutch packs instantaneously, so you don't have to wait for, or you don't have to run an electric pump, or you don't have to wait for the engine to start and run the transmission pump.
And we should tell the audience, when we say wait for the engine to start, it's not like we're crossing our arms and tapping our toes. I mean, but a few milliseconds, it'll pick up on.
Right, this hesitation you're talking about coming to a stop sign is like 300 milliseconds. So when the engine starts to shut down, you have to wait for it to shut down all the way before you can engage the starter motor. And so the one-way clutch is one way getting around that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Murcha, we've been talking about hybrids. Mm-hmm. Chrysler did a deal with the EPA to try and develop hydraulic hybrids, where you store energy as hydraulic pressure, not necessarily in a battery. I haven't heard anything about it since. What's going on there?
The project is on track, and as you described, the technology is the analog of electric energy storage in the hydraulic world. Essentially, you have a motor and a pump, which are playing the role of a motor generator in the electric world, and then you circulate energy with the most efficient pattern, if you want, or approach. The key is hydraulic hybrids have the noise, vibration, and harshness challenge, and also weight challenges.
So they're heavy and noisy, is what you're saying.
They are heavy and noisy, and we are trying to address those key issues. We have, as you know, the plan to demonstrate a technology in fourth quarter of this year, and we are on track with that. It's going to be a minivan application that will demonstrate the technology. We think it's very appropriate because many reasons, but it's a series system that I think will probably make the case for the technology. I hope will be refined enough to overcome all the issues that we are talking about with customer acceptance.
And while Chrysler is not in bigger trucks these days necessarily, the EPA talks that this is a brilliant application for big delivery vehicles.
Yeah,
I think it makes most sense on these big delivery vehicles that already have hydraulic systems on them, right? If you think about a garbage truck that already has a hydraulic system built into it to lift the garbage cans up and compress the garbage in the back of it, that's the perfect place to use it because the hydraulic system's already there, and you're not using energy from the engine to run a hydraulic pump.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, there's so much room underneath those vehicles. You can easily package the whole hybrid system.
And weight and refinement maybe are less of an issue.
It's not quite that easy, John.
Well,
every vehicle has its packaging problems, even garbage trucks.
Well, at least the noise problem can't be that much of an issue with a garbage truck.
It depends if you get waked up by a garbage truck in the morning, because the hydraulic noise, then you might be dissatisfied. So there is always a challenge,
commercial vehicle world is facing a lot of the same problems that we're having on the passenger car side, too. They have fuel economy standards coming as well, both on-highway and off-highway. And, we have those challenges as well, given our portfolio.
Mm-hmm. And because Borg gets into...
We have our fan drive system. If you guys think about a fan on a Class 8 truck turning on, it's 60 horsepower.
Wow.
Right? So if you can avoid having that fan turn on, either with using some of our clutching technologies in the fan drive, or having some very very good aerodynamics on the fan system, that really can improve the efficiency of the whole system and avoid the amount of parasitic losses you have there.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about downsized turbo engines and how good they've become. I've got to believe you've got some tricks up your sleeve
of
what you can do with turbochargers, next generation.
Well, we have a whole portfolio of turbochargers we have today, from simple wastegated up through our regulated two-stage. And actually, we've put one system out with three turbos. But, you know, that's sort of what's happening today is this downsizing and turbocharging that you see sort of sweeping across the industry. And that's going to continue for the next 4 or 5 years. But the next generation of turbocharging is going to include cooled EGR, which is exhaust gas recirculation. And what you do is you take some of the exhaust back and put it into the intake. And when you do that, it really allows you to raise the compression ratio and improve the fuel economy of the engine. So, you know, we're seeing an additional 10% fuel economy with that type of technology, incremental to the downsizing and boosting that you see, which is between 10 and 15% depending on the implementation.
So all this is kind of cascading.
Sure. Mm. And we're actually working on the generation after that.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's where we're tying some of our valve train competencies to really push what we're calling a valve event modulated boost, where we're actually using the different exhaust valves to send some of the high temperature, high energy exhaust gas to the turbocharger, and then also using the other one to then bypass the turbocharger, so some of the pumping work that the engine does doesn't get into it. So, mm-hmm. so yeah, we're out there two generations ahead, in fact, and we're just sort of starting the next generation after that now.
As an example of the cooperation with Fiat, I mean, along the comments that Chris was making, we are getting the multi-air technology from Fiat and apply that in conjunction with turbocharging on the 1.4-liter engine that will be in various U.S. applications. So certainly the new Dodge Dart will benefit from that, and the characteristics are spectacular in terms of the fun to drive of the vehicle and kind of sportiness and the torque characteristic of the engine with this technology. So it's turbocharging is, again, one keyword. There are many others that help us in
terms
of technology.
We've been evaluating cooled EGR, and we agree it's definitely a key technology. It's going to help expand the application of downsized turbocharged engines to a broader range, so it's really a fantastic direction.
Roger, how small will engines get? I got to believe today probably the average displacement is 2.5 liters, maybe.
Yep, that's a great question.
You know, we see Ford coming out with a 3-cylinder engine, at least in Europe. Fiat is doing a 2-cylinder engine. Mm-hmm. 2025, well, what do you think the average engine size is going
to
be?
I can tell you it's been 4 cylinders are really the dominant engine these days, and it never used to be that way. So they've been on a trend downward. It's very interesting, though. There was a recent study done at MIT, and they show that even the little crevice volumes on the upside of the ring landing has a big effect. And as you go down and down in size, that actually becomes a much greater effect, a larger part of the fuel economy. So we've got to be very careful when we downsize on all of those kinds of aspects and looking at all those details and make sure that we minimize those little crevice volumes and go down. So to answer your question, how low can you go? Probably much below a liter in a lot of vehicles. You know, today our Cruise has a 1.4-liter turbo, and people would have never dreamed of that just a few years ago, right? And you drive the car, it's got tremendous responsiveness, very good acceleration. So we'll be going much lower.
But I think that to answer your question about how low can you go, it's going to get down to can you launch the vehicle? And because once you launch the vehicle and the engine starts to spool up, you can build boost and we can make lots of performance. But it's actually launching the vehicle that's going to be the limit.
But doesn't that bring us back to what we were talking earlier on the e-assist, where you have a smaller battery, that's not as big as a strong hybrid or certainly an electric car?
But we're working on other technologies as well to
such
solve
as,
that problem.
Can you give us any hint?
Well, we haven't announced
apparently
them yet.
Apparently not. Well, tell me this, and you guys chime in too. I remember the last energy crisis in the late 70s, early 80s. And everybody was going crazy with ceramics, ceramic turbochargers, ceramic piston caps, valves, and all that sort of thing. Is the ceramic thing, was that just a pipe dream?
I think it was a pipe dream. The ceramics kind of have their place, but they're used in aircraft engines. Mm-hmm. But to really be cost-effective and be able to make a turbocharger that these guys can afford, that the end consumer can afford, probably not.
And one of the other holy grails has been electronically actuated valves. So instead of big springs and camshafts and chains and all that, any hope for... You guys are just smiling. I don't think so.
No, I mean, if you looked into the multi-air system, it's actually infinitely variable controlled valve train done hydraulically, electrohydraulically, I should say. Mm-hmm. It's a very efficient solution. And mm-hmm. it's,
But I think to your point of actually using electrical energy to open the valves, you don't really appreciate an engine running with a camshaft until you don't have one, right? the valves don't do exactly what you're expecting them to.
Yeah.
You really need to, you have to put energy in to open them, but then you also have to put, you never recover that energy, and you have to put extra energy in to stop the valve hitting the seat too hard. So there's all this energy you're putting into the valve when you're opening them that it's just not going to work.
Every time you convert energy from one domain to the next, you lose some, too.
Some efficiency.
The most efficient mechanical device is an axle, okay, has an efficiency of one.
On that note, I need to object slightly to your comment because actually the efficiency is slightly lower than one, unfortunately. But we are working on improving that and a big gain of 2% in the axle because it's so much downstream in the powertrain. Obviously, the efficiency of that axle applies to everything what you got from the engine, transmission, and so on. So it affects the overall balance. It makes a big difference. So on that note, we work with our partners at F and actually 2% fuel economy in axles, we are very happy to translate sometime to 1 mile per gallon.
And unfortunately, on that note, we're going to have to stop right here. But Roger, Mircea, and Chris, thanks so much for coming in. And I want to thank all of you for having joined us on AutoLine This Week.
Underwriting for AutoLine This Week has been provided by...
We are IAC Group, a global Tier 1 supplier of vehicle interior solutions that span the rapid, ever-changing needs of today's industry. From interior design and engineering to manufacturing and delivery, IAC, our heritage, your advantage.